Okay, everybody. Welcome to the May 23rd, 2021, and this is the workshop of Perseverance and Hope. My name is Suzanne. I'm your moderator for this workshop, and please unmute everybody and join me in the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Amen.
Amen. Okay, this workshop is about perseverance and hope. We have 5 or 6 speakers, depending upon how the time goes, 15 to 20 minutes apiece. They're going to talk about how program has helped them persevere and have hope in their life. The first speaker we have today is Perry.
I take it that's my cue.
Yes, good morning. How would you like your time?
Oh, right. Okay, my time. Let me know if I reach 15 minutes. If not, I'll wing the rest. 15 minutes and then after that, 1 minute. Thanks, Susie.
Oh, we'll be in on it.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. So, good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on where you are. My name is Perry, with a P like Peter, and Suzanne said, and I am a compulsive eater. Once again, welcome to today's workshop. I'm going to start off with a bunch of readings directly from AA literature, so I'd like to remind you that I won't be changing the words, so you'll need to think, see how. When I say AA and compulsive eater, when I say alcoholic. I hope you'll also remember that our See How tools tell us we are learning one day at a time to abstain from negative thinking. And on page 132 in the AA Big Book, it says we aren't a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. So if something sounds like I'm joking, and hopefully I meant it that way, please don't hesitate to laugh. I won't be able to hear you, but enjoy it. The first reading is from an AA book I never heard of before, but I'm glad I heard of it now, considering I live in a downstairs apartment with lovely hardwood floors and have a lovely trilingual family with a very verbal and active 3-year-old son upstairs from me who also have hardwood floors. And I certainly hope that we won't be able to hear him, running back and forth on the floor. So anyway, so this first reading is page 87. In a book called AA for Alcoholics with Mental Issues and Their Sponsors. And it's about perseverance. And it says, today, quote, I sponsor someone with an extreme mood disorder. And watching her persevere and going to any length to pursue all avenues of recovery has been an amazing, inspiring experience. But then there's an important note that said you do not need to have experience with mental illness in order to sponsor someone with mental illness because we are carrying the message of AA, not acting as doctors or therapists. So that just, I kind of related to that, you know, watching someone persevere, it's so inspiring to me. Next reading is from the Big Book, Chapter 10, Two Employers, page 144. It says, you are betting, of course, that your changed attitude plus the contents of this book will turn the trick. In some cases it will, in others it may not. But we think that if you persevere, the percentage of successes will gratify you. And I related to this passage when I realized that this concept I need to also apply to sponsoring and reaching out. I have to humbly accept that even I'm not going to always be successful with sponsees and encouraging prospects to try See How. But the more I persevere, the better my chance of succeeding with at least some, And then if I continue to persevere, the some might grow to many. And that's very, very important to me because, you know, that's sponsoring and outreach and trying to, you know, the main purpose of our program is to carry the message to other compulsive eaters. And the last on perseverance that I want to read is from the Daily Reflections, March 19th, on Prayer It Works. It has been well said that almost the only scoffers at prayer are those who never tried it enough. And that's from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 97. And it continues, having grown up in an agnostic household, I felt somewhat foolish when I first tried praying. I knew there was a higher power working in my life. How else was I staying sober? But I certainly wasn't convinced he, she, it wanted to hear my prayers. People who had what I wanted and said prayer was an important part of practicing the program. So I persevered. And with a commitment to daily prayer, I was amazed to find myself becoming more serene and comfortable with my place in the world. In other words, life became easier and less of a struggle. I'm still not sure who or what listens to my prayers, but I'd never stop saying them for the simple reason that they work. And my last reading is on hope. It's also from the Daily Reflections, February 23rd. It's called Mysterious Paradoxes. Such is the paradox of AA regeneration. Strength arising out of complete defeat and weakness. The loss of one's old life as a condition for finding a new one. That's from AA Comes of Age, page 46, and it continues, what glorious mysteries paradoxes are. They do not compute. Yet when recognized and accepted, they reaffirm something in the universe beyond human logic. When I face a fear, I am given courage. When I support a brother or sister, my capacity to love myself is increased. When I accept pain as part of the growing experience of life, I realize a greater happiness. When I look at my dark side, I am brought into new light. When I accept my vulnerabilities and surrender to a higher power, I am graced with unforeseen strength. I stumbled through the doors of AA in disgrace, expecting nothing from life, and I have been given hope and dignity. Miraculously, the only way to keep the gifts of the program is to pass them on. And that, fellow compulsive eaters, is why I agreed to participate in this workshop today, why I share at meetings, why I frequently stay for the fellowship after meetings, and why I accept outreach calls and make calls, especially to those who are new, returning, struggling with their attempts to get abstinent, or suffering from physical or emotional challenges. I'm glad that I've always had God in my life. I always did when I was in the program. But then I'd get angry, and I'd stop trusting him. And I believe he was still there, but I didn't trust him to be there for me. But this last time when he made it clear that I had to return to see how, he helped me become willing and helped me trust him enough to turn my will of my life over the care of him, over to his care no matter what. And as soon as I came back with that surrender, I was given hope. And so where it says at the end of the last reading, I've been given hope and dignity. I've got the hope part. I'm still working on the dignity. Then as I worked the program, I found all of the other you know, paradoxes coming true. I had a lot of fears, and when I was willing to face them, or able to face them, with the Serenity Prayer, or with sharing with my sponsor, or writing and reading it, sharing at a meeting, whatever it was, you know, I was given the courage, just like it says here. You know, sharing with you guys and sharing the love that I feel in this program, first of all, it's helped me learn how to love. And I'm finally coming to love myself. That's amazing. This is an amazing, amazing program. The things, the gifts that I'm getting. I've had to learn to accept pain. Pain and disability. Disability came 2 years into program. At that point, I really, truly had to learn what perseverance was all about. Because the only way I could stay in the program was to persevere, was to stay no matter what. You know, I couldn't go to face-to-face meetings anymore, and this was long before COVID. So I still couldn't go to face-to-face meetings. I tried. It didn't work. And, you know, thank God for PhoneBridge. You know, God is providing me with the, you know, through this program, with everything that I need to keep that hope. And so I don't know how close I am to the 15 minutes. Susie, can you let me know?
You have 9.5 left.
For 15? Or total?
No, that was the total.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, oh gosh. So I'm still supposed to go on for another 5 minutes with all those readings. You know, it's like I share frequently that the first gift I was given when I surrendered and I became willing to turn to, I made the decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God as I understand Him. And I added the words, no matter what, because before that I realized that it had always been as long as everything was going, you know, good. And I realized that doesn't work, because things aren't going to always go good. Sometimes God's answer is going to be no. Sometimes it's going to be not yet. Sometimes whatever He answers is just not going to feel good. And life just isn't always great. And when I finally came back realizing I couldn't afford to leave again, I really couldn't. I was at too much risk, health risks. As soon as I made that surrender, all of a sudden I had a new look at step one. And I realized what the word that says and how it works. Alcohol is cunning, baffling, powerful. And for me, food and the disease of compulsiveness in whatever area is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And all of a sudden, I understood what cunning meant. And I share this a lot, and I don't know how many of you have never heard me. I get on meetings all times of the day, all days of the week, many, many, many meetings every week. So probably most of you have heard me share this. But all of a sudden, I could hear the food saying, because what I wanted, really, I did not want to come back. I wanted to die, because I still wasn't happy in my life, and that's the first time I came back not happy. I still didn't like anything. I didn't like my marriage. I didn't like my family. I didn't like my boss. I didn't like anything in my life, and I wanted to die. And they told me, you know, that the disease will kill you. And I heard it laughing. I heard it laughing, saying, yeah, we'll kill you. I promise. I promise I'll kill you. 40, 50 years down the line. In other words, it was not lying totally. It was just like leaving out an important part. It's not going to let me die when I wanted to die. And, of course, chances are, if all of a sudden I found out that I was dying, then I wouldn't want to die. At least that's what's happened in the past. So, and then I heard say, yep, you want oblivion? We'll promise you oblivion. I'll promise you oblivion. And I realized, you know, God showed me that the only thing it ever made me oblivious was the possibility of anything positive happening in my life. And I realized that it was cunning like a fox. And I could see that little cartoon. I could see the fox waving its tail at the hound and teasing it. But before it ever waved its tail, it already knew where it was going to hide. Is that 5 minutes? Susie, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
It wasn't me, but it's a 5 minutes and a few seconds. Now.
Okay. All right, thanks. So, you know, I've gotten amazing, amazing gifts that have given me hope. Because once I realized the food was lying, I had no choice. I had no choice. I didn't want to be the hound chasing that fox forever and ever while it was making me more and more tired. And the day I came back, I got an amazing sponsor. Over 4 years later, I'm still with that sponsor. You know, gosh, the hope just kept growing and growing and growing. And I really didn't think of anything as perseverance, because perseverance, you know, makes it feel like something I have to do. And I didn't learn that concept till 2 years later, you know, because it was just automatic. If I'm turning my will over to life, over my will and my life over the care of God, as I understand him, no matter what, then it automatically became like, you know, I abstain no matter what, because that's what it means to me. The first part of turning my will and my life over means I'm turning the food over, I abstain, period, end of discussion. You know, that's it. No questions asked. 2 years later, still abstinent, on maintenance for a year and a half at that point, about a year and 3 months or something, I became disabled. And guess what, folks? The disability was caused by the same thing that scared me back 2 years earlier. I was afraid of becoming disabled and losing my toes. Thank God I have not lost toes. Please God I won't. But I have the numbness, and I have a lot of pain now. And, you know, that's where I learned perseverance. In my first 4 months of back in program, my son, please God, he should be well, had another manic delusional episode, his second or third at that point. I'd lost track. And I got through it in a different way. I didn't try to control things anymore. I just turned it over. And that was only 4 months back in program. Because my first compulsion, I realized, was control. My second was self-pity. I could wallow in self-pity. So that's not what sent me back here. What sent me back here was fear of physical problems. And 2 years later, I could cope with them. Thank God. He waited 2 years to make them, you know, to show. And I learned perseverance. But it's not with my abstinence. that's don't, I don't think that's ever been in question, and please God, it never will. And what I wanted to close with, now we're into the last 5 minutes, and I can. So what I've learned from putting this together is that having been given hope from God, program, and all of you, I've been able to persevere. And then perseverance has enabled me to hold on to hope. And it's a cycle that I pray never ends. You know, that the hope will always give me the ability to persevere. And the perseverance will always enable me to hold on to hope. So thank you, Suzanne, for inviting me to kick off today's panel. And all of you for being here. Susie, as so often, doing your wonderful timing and clear timing. And all of you that are here. So thanks. And God willing, I'll be around towards the end of the meeting to get the workshop to give my number.
Thank you, Perry. Our next speaker is Beth.
Hello, everybody. My name is Beth. I'm a compulsive eater. And
before we start, I'm going to do a mass mute, and then C, please work a B. I forgot the B part. B, work out your 15 to 20 minutes with Susie. So I'm going to do a mass mute first, okay?
Yeah.
You know what? Work out your time first, then I'll do the mass mute.
Susie, why don't you give me when it's 10 minutes, and then 5 minutes, and 1 minute, please.
Okay. My pleasure.
Hold on, everybody. Okay, our next speaker is Beth. Thank you, Beth. 15 to 20 minutes. Take it away.
Good morning. My name is Beth, and I'm a compulsive eater. And I'll start and qualify. I've been in program and abstinence since February 3rd, 2011, which comes to 10 years, 3 months, and 20 days. And that really only comes through having hope and faith in the higher power and perseverance. And I wanted to focus my ability to persevere and hope is through recognizing time. What is time? How do I manage my time? Whose time is it? And that came about, I think, because of the last year. I've had, quote, extra time because I've stayed at home more. But where does the time go? And I recognize that time is something that I value. It's become like an issue, and I can resent it if, quote, my time is taken away. And I know a lot of people, whether it's newcomers or people getting frustrated with how much time program takes. Like, how do I have time to do my tools? How do I have time to do 3 phone calls and call people and make sure I talk with 3 people, not just leave 3 messages? How do I have time for all the food prep? I know I get sometimes a little jealous of my husband, who can cook his dinner in 5 minutes, and, you know, it takes me an hour. And I can choose to live in that resentment and self-pity, which leads to destructiveness and disease, or I can pause and I can frame shift and say, this is what God has me doing right here, right now. So the crux of the underlying theme of my talk is shifting the concept from my time to God's will, self-will to God's will. Time is a gift from my higher power. It's not something for me to control and manipulate, compare, complain. And acceptance is the key. Whatever God has in front of me, this is what God's will is for me and how God wants me to be spending my time. All that to say, I am responsible for my time. It is important for me to have a schedule and plan out my day and be aware of how long it takes me to do things so I can be ready and take ownership and be responsible when it comes to time management. So I've recognized that abstinence is a journey. It's like a marathon. It's one step at a time. It's not a sprint. And how do I find time to work my program? I ask myself, is it my time or is it God's time? And as I mentioned this last year, that I've had a lot of extra time, but sometimes I feel like there's even less time. I've been working for home, and I need to be responsible and get my job done. And then my dog demands attention and distraction and wants to play out or wants to do this or wants to do that. And I get frustrated. It's like, wait a second. You know, this is my time, right? I need to be responsible. And, always underlying is the idea that when I'm not getting what I want done, I get disturbed. I get frustrated. And when I'm disturbed, the big book and program and sponsor always ask me, what's underneath that? What is that anger? What is that fear underlying? And frequently it's fear of not enough or fear of getting too much of something I don't want. And when it comes to work, fear that I'm not going to get my work done or fear my boss will get angry at me or fear of not meeting my own expectations of professionalism and having to set boundaries of what I need to do to take care of myself or take care of my dog or other people, having children at home and trying to balance and manage life. And so I have to surrender again, trust that it's God's time. And I can just do the best I can with it. And just remembering for me that all things are gifts from a higher power. Health is a gift, finances, relationships, food, time. How can I honor my higher power with the gifts that he gives me? How can I be a good steward? How can I honor my higher power with the time, the gift of time that is given? Everybody gets 24 hours a day. And so sometimes I give a gift. There's an herb called time. So if it's a food mention, you can delete it if need be. But sometimes I give a bottle of time out to presents for people, busy bosses, and like, here's some extra time for you, and you can just shake it on whatever you need to grow. And so it's kind of a fun play on word gifts that I give time to people. but really, my higher power is the one that gives me time, and it's 24 hours a day, and that's all each of us get. And I recognize that, I'm really God's vessel. And how can I be a good steward of that time, of those gifts? And the step 11 prayer is a great example of that, of how do I be a good channel of the gifts my higher power has given me. And page 99 and step 11 in the 12 and 12, the prayer goes, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there's hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, where there is doubt, I may bring faith, where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. And that is really powerful reminder for me of how can I serve my higher power and be a channel, be a pipe or a conduit where my higher power's gifts time, energy, strength flow through me to be of service to others and the higher power. Another question people ask about, you know, persevering through program and time, like, well, how do I fit program into my life? How do I do everything? How do I get everything done? You know, I'm a busy working person. I've got kids. I've got pets. I've got a full-time job. And the question is, you know, am I incorporating life and program together, or am I just fitting program on top of my existing life? I know many people in program who have all walks of life, but one in particular has a full-time job, and she's raising two daughters. She's a single mom, and at one time I think she had four sponsees, and also serves, you know, at world and area level. How does she do it? God gives her the strength that she needs, and she has the commitment and dedication. Other people are retired, or other people are staying at home and not having any jobs, and they find time to serve, and they serve at their own capacity. And others, you know, newcomers who struggle with this, like, okay, I've got to really shift, and that's really the bottom line, is shift, having a frame shift. I get to do the tools, not that I have to. It's really a shift in mentality of what is my purpose, what is my higher power's purpose. There's another kind of reading, as Bill sees it, page 16, that talks a little bit about frame shift, and the idea of how we think.
Remaining.
Thank you so much, Susie. And so this idea about shifting our attitudes and being aware of how this 24-hour gift is an opportunity to serve God, to be abstinent, to help others. So page 16, as Bill sees it, never again. Most people feel secure on the 24-hour basis that they do in the resolution that they will never drink again. Most of them have broken too many resolutions. It's really a matter of personal choice. Every AA has the privilege of interpreting the program as he likes. Personally, I take the attitude that I intend never to drink again. This is somewhat different from saying, I will never drink again. The latter attitude sometimes gets people in trouble because it is undertaking on a personal basis to do what we alcoholics never could do. Is it too much? An act of will and leaves, not question, it is too much an act of will and leaves too little room for the idea that God will release us from the drink obsession, provided we follow the AA program. So this idea that I intend to never drink again, I intend to use the tools, I get to use the tools, not that I have to, I must. This is a gift. The tools, this program is a gift. My sponsor reminds me, we are the lucky ones. And I see that. I have a friend who's struggling with food, and I've shared my experience, Strength and Hope, and it reminds me of how lucky I am to have this program. And so here's a few just practical how-to tips when people are talking about time and how do I manage my time and how do I do my program efficiently or effectively, or how can I fit program into my life? How do I shift that so program is my life and my choices are interweaved with my program? And here's some physical ways of doing things. Let's see here. Food prep. Some people spend kind of several hours on a Sunday to make all the meals for a week, make big batches and divide it, weighed and measured. Some people have chopping parties and they're chopping things. Make phone calls in a time frame during the day. I'm just like, okay, I'm going to set aside an hour and see if I can speak with three people. I'll have them call me back. Set aside time for sponsor calls, and take those calls back to back, and have a limit or a boundary for the call. I have 10 minutes with my sponsor and 10 minutes with my sponsee, and we get through everything, and it looks great. And if there are issues that need longer time, sometimes we extend, or sometimes we, you know, discuss it further the next day. So having those boundaries is a good way to honor time, honor God's time. And if you do need to go on an outreach call with somebody who, you know, the time is more than you need, and continue to, you have other things that really are seeking priority, you can say, thank you so much for connecting. I do need to go. We could talk more about this later. We could more talk about, is it okay? Or would you be willing to talk to this and make another outreach call? Somebody else might benefit from your experience, strength, and hope. And so recognizing that time management is important, and we all need to work the tools, and we do it in different ways. Let's see. Another thing, recognizing my own character defects of underlying of time and how I want to spend my time, being in control of my time, is this concept of fear of missing out, FOMO, as they call it. I actually coined it a long time ago, and I named it Moose Syndrome, like moose in Alaska, M-O-O-S-E, missing out on something exciting. And I was like, oh, I can't do, you know, this and this. I've got to go see this and this and this, and I've got to go. And in recognizing that my self-worth and identity is on what I do and what I accomplish. Thank you. I'll wrap it up in 5 minutes. And this idea that I'm more successful if I do more, if I'm more liked, I'm more likable if people see how good I am and how much I accomplish and how long my resume is. And that makes me go, self will run riot. And I've been more intentional, not perfect, but more intentional about meditation and recognizing, again, it's God's time. Can I just pause for 10 minutes, 15 minutes to let God fill me rather than just starting checking off my to-do list? And I start, when I get up, sometimes I confess it is procrastination, but I lay in bed and I say the third step prayer, or I say the serenity prayer, and I ask God to guide my day and do with me as he will. And then taking time to, sounds like somebody's been muted, to pause and recognize that time on a spiritual plane is way more productive. And so step 11 talks about the power of prayer and meditation. And page 96 in step 11 says, prayer and meditation are our principal means of conscious contact with God. We AAs are active folk, enjoying satisfactions of dealing with the realities of life, usually for the first time in our lives, and strenuously trying to help the next alcoholic who comes along. So it isn't surprising we often tend to slight serious meditation and prayer. Something is not really necessary. To be sure, we feel it's something that might help us to meet an occasional emergency. But at first, many of us are apt to regard it as somewhat mysterious skills of clergymen, from which we may hope to get a secondhand benefit, or perhaps we don't believe in these things at all. And so on page 97, it kind of concludes, those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would do no more without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine. And for the same reason, when we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of the vitality needed of support. As the body can fail in its purpose for lack of nourishment, so can the soul. We all need the light of God's reality, the nourishment of his strength, and the atmosphere is grace. To an amazing extent, the facts of AA life confirm this ageless truth. And so, looking at spiritual time versus physical time, when I pause and meditate, I'm able to just be. And it's almost like I can take a spot check inventory, too, if I'm pausing and just letting what's going on ruminate in my head and just, like, surrendering to that God. As Bill sees it on page 132, it talks about a spot checking from the 12 and 12, actually, page 90 to 91. A spot check inventory taken in the midst of disturbances can be very great help in quieting stormy emotions. Today's spot check finds its chief application to situations which arise in each day's march. The consideration of long-standing difficulties had better be postponed when possible. Two times deliberately set aside for that purpose. The quick inventory is aimed at our daily ups and downs, especially those where people or new events throw us off balance and tempt us to make mistakes. And taking that time to pause provides exponential time.
1 minute.
Thank you. And so if I continue on this plane of obsession and negativity and fear, it's like, you know, sitting in a rocking chair, lots of worry and going nowhere. But if I pause, if I take action by praying, I write down negative thoughts and I put them in a God box, I am able to surrender and give that over to God and have a quality life, quality events, quality emotions, rather than quantity. And that's what I want, is a hope-filled quality of life, and being at peace with God's purpose for me and presence. So when I surrender my time and I surrender to God, I'm able to accept God's will for me and be dependent on God. And when I'm filled with God's strength and purpose, I'm able to persevere. And as I persevere in daily abstinence, I do find hope. And hope and confidence gives me freedom, freedom from food obsession, freedom from fear, and the ability to live a life happy, joyous, and free. And here's a closing, final 10 seconds. Some inventory questions I just wrote for myself about time, such as, what does time mean to me? How do the tools impact my abstinence? How does my abstinence influence how I use my time? How did I use my time prior to abstinence? How would my higher power like me to use the gift of time given to me? And how can I serve my higher power one moment, 1 hour, 1 day at a time? And so as I surrender my will to my higher power's will, it's like a train track. My will is parallel to my higher power's will, like train tracks are parallel. And the tracks must be parallel in order for that train, for that boxcar to go and move forward. And so I am grateful that God is with me, and nothing is wasted in God's economy. That's a good mantra for me. I'm like, oh, I wasted all my time, and that didn't happen, and nothing is wasted. And God is with me, and God is here with me, right here, right now. And I receive God's gift of time. I receive God's gift of hope, so I can persevere and be abstinent one moment, 1 day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth, so much. Our next speaker is Jan. Jan, please work out your time with Susie.
Thank you, Suzanne. This is Jan. Susie, could you tell me when 15 minutes is up, and I have, this is 20 minutes, correct?
Yeah, yes, 15 to 20, yep.
Okay. Yeah, tell me when 15 minutes is up, and then 1 minute left.
Okay, an honor.
Thank you so much. Hey, I'm Jan. I'm a compulsive eater. I live in Arizona, and I appreciate being part of this workshop today. It really got me to thinking about some interesting things in my life, my whole life, actually, when we talk about perseverance and hope. I started doing some research on perseverance and hope, and I'm not one to remember where I read things. I'm not an avid reader, as some folks are, but I forget where I read things. So what I did was I looked up perseverance and I looked up hope in the dictionary and came up with just amazing synonyms, definitions and synonyms for both. And they, you know, I can apply so many of those in different aspects of my life. And what really, what struck me is how they fit into my life today in recovery. I have 16 years, 10 months, and some days of back-to-back abstinence in the program, 2 days long. I've been in program 2 days longer than that. It took me 2 days to get it together and really turn it over. But it was amazing how, when I looked at it, you know, the word perseverance, I couldn't find it anywhere in the books because I didn't know where to look. But that's okay because all the synonyms were there. Persistence, tenacity, determination, resolve, resolution, dedication, commitment, and so many other things. You know, just a whole big long list. And hope was aspiration, desire, wish, expectation, ambition, aim, plan, and then the list continues on and on. One place that I run into the word hope all the time is sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And so much of that I have because I persevered. You know, I can apply the word itself. You know, if we're talking words here, definitions, you know, that's where it is. But in applying it to my life, I got to thinking, my life has been four major increments. The first was birth to 21, and that was not the best time of my life. My first 10 years were awesome, not 9 years until my mother passed away, and my dad remarried 2 years later, and the following 10 years were pretty traumatic in many ways. But in doing the work in this program, in my recovery program, I find that there were many good things that occurred because I had, my dad happened to marry a nurse. And so from the time that my biological mother was sick when I was just 8 years old, I decided, you know, that I wanted to be a nurse. And that was the hope that I had, the wish, the desire, the aspiration. It was an aspiration. It was a calling for me, I felt. And despite everything else that went on in the next 10 years, my stepmother was very instrumental in getting me into nurse's training right after high school. And what a gift that was, because I was calculating 56 years ago, I'm stretching it a little bit, I graduated from nurse's training, and I worked as a nurse all of my, till I was 65, and it's something that never leaves your blood, really. Everybody says, you're a nurse. I said, no, look it up on the internet, whatever you need to know. But today, I am so grateful because 48 years ago, I made another life decision. When I became a nurse, I had hoped, you know, I had knew that I had to persevere, and I did. I did so many different things during that nursing career. And 48 years ago, I had aspirations to be married, and I did. I married my husband, who is still my husband today. That was an exercise in perseverance for all of us here. But also, along with that perseverance, that dedication, it required a lot of tenacity because things change. In my nursing career, things changed. In my marriage, things changed. The ups and downs in life that we have, which if I don't have a commitment to it and dedication to that, it goes nowhere. It would usually end. If I had given up on my difficult times in nursing, or even in my first part of my life, had I just run away and escaped, it wouldn't have been turned out the way it did. So I had to stick to it. And I had to stick to my nursing no matter what I did. And my marriage, it didn't occur to me not to be married. So I had the expectation that I would always be married until God had other plans for me. All during my life, I was a compulsive eater as long as I can remember, especially from the age of 11, it became quite apparent and caused all kinds of problems. And it just got worse. But all through my adult life, I was heavy, and I had the hope, the expectation that someday I would be thin. I would be thin. That was my goal. That was my goal in life. I was like 170 when I got married. My husband weighed 125. My goal in life was to weigh less than him. I mean, that was it. I had to weigh less than my husband. Well, he gained a whole lot of weight, and I lost a lot of weight. That isn't what I had planned, but that did come out. But the marriage was, had some really rough times. One of my desires and hopes was to be a mother, and I was blessed with three great kids, and to whom I'm still making living amends. And I tried all the diets. I tried everything in hopes that I would lose the weight and be thin, but I never could persevere. I could never stick to it for longer than 3 or 4 months. And finally, I hit my total bottom because hope had failed. Everything had failed. And I just couldn't try anymore. And I was led by the God of my understanding that I didn't even realize was there at my side all the time. He brought me into these rooms, led me here. And no, that was an adventure. That was a journey. Because each time I entered a new phase of my life, I had to go through periods of adaptation and learning. When I came into these programs, I started out, I was introduced to the 12 steps. And what a gift that was, that really helped me to move along in my life, to have direction. Like I said, I had hit my total bottom with compulsive eating, with all of my other addictions, whatever, they were no other substance addiction. However, there were big time problems that had run rampant in that last year. And coming into the steps 1, 2, and 3, when I learned I can't, God can, I think I'll let him. I found out who my higher power was. I found out that, this God of my childhood, of my young childhood, is really there for me. And he's, what I was looking for was a building that represented a higher power, and I could never find that. I ended up recognizing that this, the God of my understanding today is
10 minutes one, left.
Thank you, Susie. The God of my understanding is one who is loving, who wraps his love around me, who cares. He's always there for me. I can turn anything over to my higher power, even though I know he hears me. He knows what's going on. I just have to put it on paper, and I do it through paper and pencil because my head is just too crazy. There's a constant committee meeting in there that I can't sort out. So I have to put it on paper, and I write a letter to my higher power. Dear God, and I just spill everything onto that paper. And then what I do is pray about it and meditate and say, okay, God, this is what's going through my head. Help me with it. And then it's my turn. I have to listen. And this is how God helps me through all of these challenges that I have. And I did work through all of the steps little by little. I had my first sponsor, unfortunately, had to leave the program. And so I had to find a new sponsor. And apparently I wasn't doing my first steps appropriately and didn't really get much from the exercises. And so with the second sponsor, she said, well, let's do this again. I was okay with steps 1, 2, and 3, but when it came to 4, I had to do them again. And what a gift that was. The second time around, I learned so much about recovery. I learned about myself. I learned about where I came from. And I knew that this was not going to be an easy journey for any of us, me or my higher power. He's going to have his hands full with me. But I I stuck to it. I kept on keeping on, and I kept doing what I needed to do. I persevered. I did my inventory. I did my steps. I did my list of defects and turned them over. I had to turn it all over, and I got through all of my steps. And when I was thinking about this today, what really came to mind, I was reading through the steps, and how did I know what perseverance was from what I was doing and reading? And, you know, in the big book, pages 83 and 84, are the list of the promises that we receive in program. And it's I'm not going to read this whole thing. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we're amazed before we're halfway through. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We won't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. And it goes on. And what it started me to thinking was, maybe this isn't just a short-term thing. When I came into program, it was for the vanity. And, you know, I just wanted to lose weight. I had to lose weight. And I found, hey, it worked, so I think I'll stick around. And then I found out I was getting other benefits. I was getting all of these promises. I heard them repeatedly read in meetings. And I'm like, what are they talking about? And then I started to realize what they're talking about. And then the last section of the promises, are they extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I was the slow one. They will always materialize if we work for them. And working for them meant I got to stick around. I have to do whatever it takes in order to benefit from the recovery that I've already received. And this thought brings us, I'm reading now, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along, which means it's inferring, I guess I got to keep traveling this road. Vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It's not an overnight matter. It could continue for our lifetime. And this is, you know, it just goes on. But what I wanted to share now is how the difference it has made in my life today, in those periods in my life. My recovery has allowed me to forgive and to be forgiven for the past. It allowed me to retire from my calling, my avocation as a nurse. I couldn't bring myself to retire until I was able to turn over my life at that point and give up my fear of economic insecurity to my higher power as I could retire. And ever since then, my marriage has been a whole new way of life. My husband and I today have such we are such great friends. We can laugh at each other. We can share things. We can disagree. We agree to disagree, and we can do that. Fighting does not exist in my home because I get PTSD. But we can disagree, and we can talk about things and talk them out. And today, I have such an acceptance of who he is because I have changed. I have recovered. I never am recovered. I continue to recover in my program and in my experience so that he's still the same person I married because there was something there 48 years ago. And today, we have a true relationship. But nothing supersedes this relationship that I have with my higher power. And I cannot lose that, which is why I am totally committed. I persevere day by day, do what I need to do, do my tools, and I have true hope and expectations for another day today, and through abstinence and my higher my program. Thanks for letting me share, and it's a blessing for me to be able to share with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. And before we go to our next speaker, I just want to do the silent tradition. If you're listening to this workshop live or on the recording line or on the website, please give. If you like this workshop, please go to cahow.org, go to meetings, and go to PhoneBridge. At the bottom of the PhoneBridge page, you'll find the information. Please give. It is customary to give for workshops, if you can, if you want to. Okay, our next speaker is Marcia D. from Seattle. Marcia, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. And how would you like your 15 to 20 minutes work it out with Susie, please?
Susie, give me when I have 10 left, 5, and 1. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Marcia.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to talk about, and if it's uncomfortable for some, I understand. I'm going to come from the aspect of pain, emotional pain, physical pain, and spiritual pain. I was always telling my sponsors and people that I don't know how to persevere. I never learned how to ride a bike. I never learned how to play the piano. I never did anything that took perseverance. Because anything that you do well, you have to persevere. It's just very interesting because I looked at hope, but everywhere that I was looking, I saw hope. But the thing that was coming out at me was the word light. And I wrote down some definitions too of how does perseverance come in my life. I know that I have to be diligent. I know that, and I looked it up, and in big bold letters it said steadfast. I have to be diligent. I have to go to any lengths. I have to stay abstinent no matter what. I have to be painstaking about this. And I thought, well, okay, and I too looked up all the promises. One of the promises, they've all come really true for me, but the one that I struggle with is we will not wish to shut the door on it, you know, the wreckage of our path. And that's been hard. I was born in 1952. My mother was a very tiny little woman. She was only like 4'11". And my dad was a normal man, kind of husky. And we lived in Biloxi, Mississippi on the Keesler Air Force Base. My mom had two miscarriages before she had me. And it was kind of funny because, you know, she didn't think she was going to be able to keep me, you know, stay pregnant. And so my father had to send her back to Everett to be with my grandma's house. Well, my grandma has nine children. So this funny story is that one day they're in church, and she feels me kick, and she starts screaming, "It's kicking, it's kicking, it's kicking." And my grandma says, Mary, be quiet. "Oh, Mom, it's kicking, it's kicking." And she goes, Mary. And that's the first time. And I thought about this. Suzanne, thank you so much for asking. I thought about this last night. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know how to persevere. But I do know how to persevere. And the one of the things is that when I was born, I was only 3.5 pounds. And back then, you know, a baby that was only, you know, 3.9 pounds didn't survive, but I survived. And my mom tells the story, you know, well, we just kept taking her and feeding her and feeding her and feeding her, and then she's never stopped eating since. Well, it was supposed to be a joke, but, you know, kind of hurt my feelings. What was really funny was that they didn't expect me. They didn't know that I was going to be so small. They weren't ready for me. And I slept in a dresser drawer till I was like 5 months old. And so that's kind of how I came into the world. But my father, he wanted this baby so bad, but he was so angry with my mom because I was a girl. And I don't think he ever forgave her for having a girl. And he just was always disappointed in me. I always felt disappointed. I wanted a tricycle. He decided to give me a wagon. And I remember we lived the top of this hill. And he would push me. And I would invariably go off into the ditch, into the blackberry bushes, and get all scratched up. And he'd make me crawl out and go all the way up, back up there, and go down again. And it wasn't, and I just was like, you know, just so scratched up and so beat up and stuff. And I was thinking, oh, I just wish he would accept me. And for a lot of different abuses and stuff that happened in the home, my mom had the courage to have, had the courage to ask the family to come and get her, and we went and we left, and I was 6 years old at that time. And in that time, divorced women were not accepted in any place or thing. My mother was not accepted in the churches. She wasn't even really allowed to even take me down to the library without people whispering or being in the grocery stores or anything. It was very, very difficult, and there was a lot of shame about my mom, my little mom, having two little children, a six-year-old and a one-year-old. And I kind of carried that shame, thinking, you know, well, you know, maybe I caused my parents' divorce. And so we grew up on welfare, and we didn't have a lot of money. There was no money. All the food was gone. We had commodities, and that was where I learned how to you know, comfort myself with food before I went to bed. I went to bed hungry a lot. And so it meant comfort to me. It meant I was safe. And my mother was a compulsive eater, and my sister was a compulsive eater. And I just kept putting on weight. When I was, like, 21, God called me into the rooms of overeaters. And I started losing weight, but my mother came from a family of alcoholics. So when she saw that it was the book of alcoholics, she just coiled and said, no, we're out of here. So we left. But then God called me back in again into OA. And I lost the weight. But I didn't really understand about the tools. I didn't really understand about the steps. I understood about gratitude. I understood about the food plan. And losing the weight was not my problem. My problem was living. My problem was that I was using food to face life. And I was using food because I couldn't face life. And I was coming from a place of pain. Way, way back, I now realize that I probably had ADHD or a mania kind of thing. And it carried on through my whole life. And by the grace of God, I came back into the program several times. But I just didn't know how to do it. And I was so afraid to fail. I would lose some weight, but then it got really hard because I couldn't face the pain. The pain of my past, the pain of rejection, the pain that I'm not good enough, the pain that I'm not worthy, the pain that, you know, I'm poor, you know, all of those things. We carry those things. You know, years ago they say, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, what I learned as I got to be an adult, that I can be healed from a broken bone. I had a broken ankle. But I may never heal from words that have hurt me. I've heard it said that deep within our souls, our past resides forever. And it's in our being, the things that we have hurt. It's down in our soul, and I've felt it, that God calls us into this room, and that we are all just we're just wanting to, you know, fill the void that only God, fill that hole in our soul that only God can fill. And I grew up in a very lovely Christian home, and that was my mother was a Christian, and he was my father. He became my father. My mom would sing songs to me, and I remember one that she sang, and it goes like this: I come to the garden when he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me that I am his own. And that I have always known. I've always known that I belong to him and that he does walk with me and he talks with me and he tells me that he loves me and I'm not alone. I know that, but how do I heal from the brokenness? How do I heal from the pain? How much time? I didn't hear you, Susie.
10 minutes.
10 minutes. So this is where I'm going to start off, and I'm going to talk basically about light, and I'm going to talk about pain. Many of us come into the room, and we come into the room, and we see, it says in 12 and 12, page 110, it says, to watch the eyes of men and women open with wonder as they move from darkness into light, to see their lives quickly filled with new purpose and meaning, to see whole families assembled, to see the alcoholic outcast received back into his community in full citizenship, and above all, to watch these people awaken to the presence of a loving God in their lives, those things that are substance of what we receive as we carry the message to the next alcoholic. And so when we come into the rooms, we know we want to be there because, you know, we we can't lose this weight because maybe people tell us that we're lazy. Maybe people say that, well, gosh, if you just try, or if you just persevere, you'd lose this weight and you wouldn't be fat or you wouldn't be a compulsive overeater. And we've all been there. And so I remember reading this, and this is from page 40, the last few paragraphs in step 3. And it says, then it is explained that other steps of the AA program can be practiced with success only when step 3 is given a determined and persistent trial. This statement may surprise newcomers who have experienced nothing but constant deflation and a growing conviction that human will is of no value whatever. They have become persuaded, and rightly so, that many problems besides alcohol will not yield to the headlong assault powered by the individual alone. But now it appears that there are certain things which only the individual can do. All by himself and in the light of his own circumstances, he needs to develop a quality of willingness. When he requires willingness, he is the only one who can make the decision to exert himself. Trying to do this is an act of his own will. All of the 12 steps require sustained and personal exertion to conform to its principles, and so we trust to God's will. It is when we try to make our will conform with God's that we begin to use it rightly. To all of us, this was a most wonderful revelation. Our whole trouble had been the misuse of willpower. We had tried to bombard our problems with it instead of attempting to bring it into agreement with God's intention for us. To make this increasingly possible is the purpose of AA's 12 steps, and step 3 opens the door. Once we have come into agreement with these ideas, it is really easy to begin the practice of step 3. In all kinds of emotional disturbance or indecision, we can pause, ask for quiet, and in the stillness, simply say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. But we're all on a journey. And, you know, a man came up. His name was Richard B., and he came up, and he was at one of our retreats, and he tells the story, a little analogy, and he says, we're all on this road, you know, where it talks about we trudge the road to happy destiny, and sometimes we do trudge. And he says, we're all on this road, and some of us are walking ahead because they're further in the program and many more years than we've been. Some of us are walking behind because of the newer, they're coming up and they're newer. And some of us are walking side by side because we've been in the program about the same time. And as we're going, we see the people that are in front of us, they fall down. And we go and we run up to them and we say, oh, let me help you. Oh, let me help you clean up. Oh, let me walk beside you and help you get straight, you know, back up. Sometimes the person who's behind us sees us fall. Maybe we've fallen into, you know, fallen on rocks or, you know, which is like the rock, you know, we're talking about the
5 minutes.
On the 5 minutes. Thank you so much, Susie. And then they come and they help us. And I know that I am not alone. I know I'm not alone. I have a lot of challenges right now. I was diagnosed with bipolar many, many years ago, and I have great hope because it says in the big book that then there are some of us who are manic depressants whose family and friends don't understand at all. I think, wow, I'm mentioned in the big book in the doctor's opinion, so I have hope because I am bipolar. Right now I'm dealing with the fact that I also was doing nursing, and I fell, and now I'm having...
Yeah.
So being bipolar was not something that I chose. It is something that I would not want anyone to have, and I try very, very hard not to cycle. But I was given an autistic daughter, you know, wondering about why that, but someone said to me that God gives special children to special people, parents, and so I persevered through that and raised her, and she's now 37. But she's now got, you know, a disease. She's got interstitial lung disease, and we don't know how long she's will live. Right now, you know, I wanted to go do something with my husband yesterday, and I got to shaking so bad I had to come back. You know, they say, you know, getting old really, really sucks, you know, and it's not something that we would choose. But one of the things that I really love about this program is all of the little cliches that we say. And right now it's like, right now it's things like, you know, life is what happens to you when you're planning something else, you know. There's a lot of things that I just go with the flow. I work my program no matter what. And God gives me strength every single day. And you know what? Each and every one of us, if you're here, each and every one of us has been given everything that we need to empower ourselves to work this program. But the choice is ours. But the answers are here. These literature, AA's literature, is a handbook for living. And don't cheat yourself out of the recovery. Work on those promises. They don't come until step 9. And do it afraid. That was what I had to do. I was terrified of being afraid. Everything made me afraid. But when I started saying, God, you know, I'm afraid, He came in and did for me what I could not do for myself. Now I have more courage, more trust, more faith, more serenity, more everything. And it's only because of the challenges that I faced. And I stay obstinate no matter what. Sometimes I lose so much time and get so confused, I end up weighing my food over and over and over and over. But I know at the end of the day that I'm still abstinent. And I've worked all my programs. I do service in this program. I have 3 sponsees, and I am a co-leader. I'm a delegate right now and an intergroup rep. And service is the one thing that I can do. And service was the one thing I could do no matter how much I weighed. It didn't matter that I came into, you know, the program at almost 400 pounds. I could do service, you know. And so whatever challenge that you have, no matter what it is, in this fellowship, on the phone bridge, we are a team. We are a village. We are a tribe. We are a fellowship. And you are never, ever alone. And always remember that support is just a prayer and a phone call away. And I pick up, and if I miss you, I will always call you back. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Susie, for your timing. Thank you, Suzanne, for putting this together. You're all awesome. And I don't know how many people are on the line today, but thank you for listening to all of us and us being able to share our Strength Open experience with you.
Thank you, Marcia. We have 48 people here. Thank you for sharing, Marcia. Now our next speaker is Sheila B.
Thank you, Suzanne, so much for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope today. My name
how
is Sheila
like
B.
Your, yep. How would
oh,
you like
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, Susie. Okay. Susie Q. I'll have 7, 7, and 1.
7, 7, and 1 will be a pleasure.
Thank you, honey. Thank you so much for your service. Okay. Hi, my name is Sheila B. I'm a compulsive overeater or a carbohydrate addict. And it's funny. I didn't know a lot about the word perseverance. And so, of course, anytime I'm doing something, I'm writing whatever I have to do. I'm writing on the 12 steps or the tradition, whatever. If I don't understand the word, I look it up. So for me, it's I did look up perseverance. So the definition is doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. And I go, oh, that's my program. Perseverance can be summed up to mean you're committed to your spiritual higher power as it enhances the goals, the value for you, and intensifies your motivational level. It leads you to wonderful findings and broadens your knowledge about yourself and your goals. And isn't that, for me, that is right there saying, you know, that's what I always wanted to do and what I needed to do is learn about myself. Learn about what I'm doing to my body because of my compulsive overeating. Learning what I was doing to my head because of eating the sugar. Eating the sugar, that just, I mean, it's, I always say it's, for me, it's like living in hell. That's what it is. And so I guess, you know, for me, I think, let's see, coming into this program, and I came in the 70s, and I came in, it was just OA, that's what it was, that's what you knew, and that's what you got. And it was a beginning to know and to accept and to learn about myself, because I have to live with myself. And in order for me to live with myself, I have to understand myself and realize what I was doing to myself. And along the way, I realized, you know, I never thought that I was worth taking care of myself. I did diets. Yes, I did diets. Diets galore. Spent a lot of money. Did that route in life, you know. But I never learned about myself. It was just, okay, let's get the weight off. And so psychologically, my physical part, what people notice is, you know, notices that. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, you look great and all that. And all I had to hear was that. And then it was like, okay. And I didn't learn really how to properly take care of myself and properly how to take care of my eating. And until I really, like I say, it was up and down, up and down, up and down. That's what my life was, up and down, up and down, because I'd lose the weight, but I never learned that I had a disease. I never learned how do I take care of myself, how do I take care of myself through a disease. You know, I never learned that. I never learned that years ago. This before, like I say, I ever came into a self 12-step program. So coming into a 12-step program, I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I met such wonderful, I mean, I was in OA, in and out, but for many, many, many years. I was very successful with getting the weight off. And, I mean, it, like, flew off. It was great. And, in fact, I had some people say to me, did you have a facelift or something? Because if you could see, and I'm going to, God willing, if I get to go to the convention next year, I'll bring, my picture was there the year before, but I will bring my picture again because I always have to be reminded of where I came from, you know, and where I, thank you, God, where I am today, you know. So, like I say, learning about myself, and it's funny when it comes through in program, we say, who do we have to make amends to? My number one amends was to make amends to my body. Because what I did to it with the food, what I did to my body, you know, and that's always been number one, you know, and that just was an awareness, you know, it was awareness that the program gives me today, you know. And anyway, so I'm just going to read how I found out about perseverance, okay? I became a leader for the AA Comes of Age and did that for a long while. And I never thought about it, but as reading where they came from and where they what they did for us, I mean, like my mouth flew open saying perseverance. That's where I learned about perseverance. And I say, thank you, God, because if they didn't persevere, we wouldn't have a program today. We wouldn't. We wouldn't, for me, and it's only my opinion, but we wouldn't have a program today. We wouldn't know what to do. We wouldn't know how to put one foot in front of the other, what we have to do, what we have to do to accomplish our program, to really, really accomplish what our program's about, what our program gives us, what our program we have to do to get that, to get it and find it and keep it. You know, so, I mean, to me, when I read that and learned about what they went through, and the, like I say, the perseverance, it was not an easy road. It was a very hard road. And I'll just say here, it helped.
That's the
it helps us.
Seven.
That's seven, thank you. Oh, wow, time goes by when you're having fun. So I said, it has helped us learn what it took in the story we read about perseverance in the AA Comes of Age. It is a great reveal for us to see how much time, effort it took to find a solution for our addiction. If they never persevered, we would not have so many programs today. We carry the message like our forefathers did for us. Our AA book and the 12 steps guide us every day in our program to succeed and to help others know that there is a program to follow which can help us arrest our disease one day at a time. Blessed, grateful, and so thankful, the benefit we have received from being persevering and going forward one day at a time with our sponsors, our higher power, for me is God, and the fellowship. We are never alone if we take care of ourselves each day through this gracious program we have been given. Okay, so I'm going to go on to hope. And here's my definition of hope. Hope is optimistic state of mind that is based on an expectation of positive outcomes with respect to events and circumstances in one's life or the world at large. Okay, and for me, why is hope needed? Hope is not just important, it is one of the most essential things in life for us. Why is finding hope for a future is so important? Hope is the belief that things will work out, especially when it seems otherwise. It helps you stay calm and peaceful when something less than desirable emerges. What is the spiritual meaning of hope, and why do we need hope in our lives every day? It helps support mental strength and happiness. Makes you wake up every day with feeling positive thoughts. And I know for me, I have been going through some tough things right now physically. I fell down and broke my arm. And I, of course, I've always turned it over to my higher power. Of course, I asked him to. Now, why did this happen to me, God? You know, why did this happen, you know? But sometimes, you know, there's not an answer. There's not an answer. It happened. I accept it. And I have to just keep going forward. Keep going forward with it. And I go to PT and all that. And then I ended up with another situation, and I had to have a colonoscopy, and it's funny because part of me was saying, okay, God, please, please help me. You know, let it not be, I had cancer before, let it not be cancer again, please. And I had to put in, you know, I had to put in my hope that, you know, if I put my hope to God, he's going to help me. He's going to take care of me, and if something happens, there's a reason. I always believe there's always a reason in life. It doesn't just happen to happen. And so, thank you, God. You know, I turned it over, and I just said, okay, I'm going. I did it, and thank you, God. It turned out okay. And so I'll be able to move on from that, but just still working on the arm. But that's okay. That's okay. So I'm just, you know, I know that I need hope in my life. I need hope in my life because that helps me to be positive. It helps me to take care of myself, and to know that I'm not alone. And that's a very, very important thing for me, not to be alone. So every day, you know, I turn my life over to God and I say, please, God, help me to arrest this disease that I have just one day at a time. Just one day at a time, because that's all I get. He doesn't give me a guarantee. You know, I don't know when the day will come. You know, but I do know that this disease will be with me till the day I die. So that's a reality, you know, like the light bulb goes off, and that's my reality lately, and, you know, of doing things. And like I say, you know, so I just take one day at a time. I do my program. And, you know, it's a really important thing for me is that if I can give other people hope, you know, to know there is a solution, to carry the message, to carry the message to people that there is a solution. It takes work. It doesn't just happen. We have to, you know, do that. We have to do what we need to do, what action we need to take to keep this disease arrested. And that, of course, is doing the blueprint that my sponsor has given me that I follow every single day. There's no more picking and choosing. Do I do this one or that one or that one or this one? Today, I do it all. I do it all. Because it gives me the most beautiful thing. It gives me a good life. It gives me a life that no matter what, I'm not alone. I can pick up a phone. I can call somebody. And people, I have to say, in this program, are the most wonderful people because I can talk to them. I can say what I'm really feeling, what is going on. And they're always there to give me hope and say, Sheila, just turn it over. Okay. So, you know, so it's just, I think what I love about this program is that it teaches me perseverance, and it teaches me to have hope in myself and to give hope to others, because if I do that, if I help one person, I am thrilled. I am thrilled. And I believe that's why whenever I get on meetings, whenever I lead meetings, I give service and stuff, that whatever I say to me is what God wants me to say. That's how I look at it. So it isn't probably me, it's God that's doing all the good words that come through my mouth and my brain. You know, and I just, it's just such a special, special gift to have a program. And matter of fact, it's interesting because I will read different things, or, you know, and all of a sudden I'll say, oh, my God, that's my program. That is my program, you know, and I've been so blessed with a wonderful man in my life. He's my friend, he's my partner, and he's my soulmate. And we've been married 52 years. And hasn't been smooth sailing, you know, putting up, you know, God bless him. That's what I say to him. I have to make amends. I mean, God bless him putting up with a compulsive overeater. It is not fun. It's not fun, you know, and he's always been there. He's always cared. He always tries to help me, and he loves me no matter what, and he's just so great. He's so helpful with my program. I mean, especially with breaking my arm. He's been doing the cooking. He's been absolutely wonderful. We laugh. We cook together, and it's been just us. So maybe that's the reason why it happened. I don't know. But, you know, between everything that's going on in this world and things today, thank you, God, that I still have my husband. I know I have a lot of friends that don't. And I've just been so blessed, you know. And I'll never give up. I'll never give up the hope, you know, hope that, you know, I keep going forward. That's my whole thing of life, is that, but this program, is that I have to go forward. I can't go backwards, and I've got to keep the positive thoughts. So every day I can pick to be positive or negative, and thank you, God, I pick to be positive just for today. And by that, then I can help other people. Otherwise, I cannot help anybody. And I always remember this, the same, they say, you know, God helps those who help themselves, you know. So through hope, you know, I try to help myself each day. And it's, you know, it's the support of the mental strength. I mean, I pray to God, too. I say, God, give me the strength to get through this day today, whatever is going on in my life, you know. And I like to wake up every day with that feeling of positive thoughts, not negative. So these my choices, you know. That's my choices, one day at a time, you know. So I just wanted to, probably almost time's almost gone now, and I just wanted to tell you this is what I put down for hope. H stands for helps you control your emotions. O stands for optimistic state of mind. P stands for perseverance to take care of yourself each and every day working your program. And E, every day through positive thoughts and faith helps us to believe in the positive action we take to succeed one day at a time. So all I can tell you is that I feel blessed. I feel thankful. I feel grateful. When I go to bed at night, I always think of one thing that's positive in my life and one thing that I'm grateful for. And thank God it's because of this program, and it's because of my finally learn I have to persevere ahead one day at a time. That's all I have to do. So thank you so much for letting me share. I appreciate it, and I thank everybody who has shared today, and I thank everybody that's here, and I hope. And I always say, if when you come to a meeting, a workshop, whatever, if you get one thing, you've gotten something. Thank you so much. And thank you, Susie, for your timing. And thank you again, Suzanne, for asking me to share.
Thank you, Sheila. And I'm going to close this out. Susie, give me 555 and 1. And if I get done sooner, that'll be great. That'll be wonderful. Everyone, please mute star 6. I'm Suzanne, grateful, compulsive eater. I have been here in Say How and Abstinent 18 years, 1 month and 17 days. However, I do it. I only have today. You know, I consider today day 1 of abstinence, though I've been abstinent 18 years. I came up with this only because I know their acronyms for fear, false evidence appearing real, great one. Face everything. No, F everything and run, not the great one. Or face everything and recover. I thought, what about hope? So 4 or 5 years ago, or maybe it was longer, I came up with hope. Having optimistic perspective every day. Quick, having optimistic perspective every day. When I came into the program, I had that gift of desperation. And got abstinent and got a sponsor, and I was told 3 meetings a week, great. And then I was told after a couple of weeks, spread them out. They can't be all bunched together to help me get through the week. Okay. And then I was told 1 speaker meeting, 1 big book, and 1 12 and 12, and if you do other meetings that are more speaker meetings or whatever, that's fine. But that's what I needed. Okay. That's what I was told anyway. And I was beginning to think, even though I had the gift of desperation, how am I going to do all this and care for my mom? And up to this time, the only thing that I had consistently doing with structure and discipline was caring for my mom. I was great about giving her medication and taking her to the doctor, but it came to me not so much. I had very little structure and discipline for myself. I had no sleeping schedule, no eating schedule, and it was a mess. So I was told to call my sponsor at 6:15 in the morning, and sometimes I was still awake at 6. I had not gone to sleep yet, or I'd only gone to sleep maybe at 5 in the morning. So that was the first thing that kind of put itself in order. I had to go to sleep, and with my mom it was difficult because she slept very little at times, and she wanted companionship, and I was it. However, you know, I still was able to get more sleep and get up. I would get up at 6. And that was a good thing because usually at 6 in the morning, my mom was asleep. So that allowed me to have a little time for me, though I didn't know it at the time. But I figured out, I'm like, oh, well, this is great because I actually have a little time for me. And I remember going to a meeting and I heard this person share. They were married, had a couple of kids, like around 10 and 12. They worked, and they were going to graduate school. and they were working their program. And I thought, you know, that was an inspiration for me. It gave me hope. I latched on to that, you know, someone sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I latched on to that. I thought, okay, if that person can do it, all I'm doing is caring for my mom, which some of my friends say was a job and a half, 36 hours a day, which it was a lot of times, then I can do that. You know, it gave me hope. I heard other people share that, yeah, it could be difficult, but, you know, if you have that gift of desperation, then you could do it, and that's how I could persevere. And then I started to set a little more time away aside for me. I was lucky that below me lived a doctor who was always gone at 5 in the morning, so I could get on my treadmill at 6 in the morning or 6:30. I think I got on at 6:30 after I called my sponsor. That was a great outlet for me to let go of all the stress I had. Because though I loved my mom dearly, it wasn't always easy, two women in a small apartment. And, well, you know how that goes. So I needed some stress relief, and that was great. It was time for me. That was my meditation time. And I just would remember hearing people, you know, how did they get, they set aside some time. If they had to get up earlier, then they did it. And, you know, I could hear people share about, well, I don't get up, and then, you know, at the end of the day, there's I still have a whole list of things to do, and I thought, that was me. Now I need to be those other people that actually make maybe perhaps at the beginning a little bit of a sacrifice so that I could get things done. And then at the end of the day, I actually had a little extra time left over because I had done everything earlier, which was good because then I could be of service. I used to take late-night outreach calls from people that worked because at that time I was only doing face-to-face meetings. So that was my service. I would take those calls, and I had the time to do it. I had time to be a companion to my mom, and I had time somehow sometimes to have a social life, which I needed to do too. So, you know, I've had
10 remaining.
Thank you, Susie. That went by fast. Wow. Okay. I had a lot of challenges. You know, I was blind, so I had, you know, I had a challenge. You know, I first came in, someone told me, I don't think you're going to be able to work this program. And I thought, ha, ha, ha. I am going to work it just to prove you wrong because I know how sick I am and I know I need the help. I'm up to good challenges at times, maybe not all the time, but sometimes that's enough to motivate me and keep me going. I've had challenges throughout my 18 years here, and some of those challenges were good challenges. Not all of them were bad, and because I stayed and because I didn't give up, I was able to persevere, and I had a lot of growth. It took me a long time to do steps 6 through 12 because of my blindness, but I got them done. And anybody who is dragging on their feet on doing the steps, the Say-How way, please reconsider it because I got a lot of freedom from those 6 through 12 questions. It helped me along to mature and see some things about myself I needed to see. Good things and things I needed to work on, both. It allowed me to mature to the point where I could have a better relationship with my then boyfriend that, and I later married. I persevered. I got married and had an abstinent wedding. I didn't have the traditional thing that everybody eats. Didn't have it. Didn't need it. And my husband said, I don't even like that anyway. Why are we having it? It's about us being together, not about that. So thank goodness we are on the same page about that. I persevered. This program has given me a lot of tools. And so most of the time, I would say, yeah, most of the time, 90% of the time when we travel, I always insist on a refrigerator and microwave. And we went on our honeymoon. My husband got sick the second day. And that microwave and refrigerator came in handy because I was able to get food so that he could have a couple of days to recover so we could have, you know, do and see things. And that was very, very helpful. I keep going to meetings today because I continuously need to hear other people's hope. Their experience, their strength, but their hope. Because I know without hope, I'm a dead duck. You know, I'm not gonna grow. I'm not gonna, trudge. I'm just going to kind of waddle, and then I'm going to sink, because that's the way I felt when I got here. I was about ready to sink, and I knew it. I reflect on step three. Made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand God. Not just the food, not just my food obsessions, but everything. And then at the end of the steps and traditions, it says we practice these principles in all of our affairs. Those, the tools, the concept, the steps, the traditions, those have all helped me persevere in other areas of my life and relationships, whether it be with in-laws, whether it be looking into pursuing a relationship with my mom's youngest sister, whether it is looking for my brother and having the strength to accept what happened. And I love Acceptance is the Answer in the Big Book, page 417, fourth edition. And sometimes when it's not acceptance, then I put surrender. Surrender is the answer until I can get to the acceptance. It has allowed me to persevere, as I said, in other areas of my life. And I turn it over. I practice those steps, and I practice those traditions. And it has allowed me to accept other entities, other groups that I may not belong to, but I'm sometimes asked to attend. And I'm not always on the same page as these other outings, but allows me to persevere nonetheless and remember step three and remember that I am to practice those steps and traditions and those principles in all areas of my life, dealing with perhaps untreated sick people, as the Big Book references. I must remember that a lot of people are untreated sick people. I've heard it's those, we have two types of people, those in recovery and those who are not. Everybody who wanted to could benefit. Thank you, Susie. Could benefit from the steps, but that's for them to pursue and not for me to push. The surrender part, yes. So sometimes I just surrender and the acceptance comes later. If I do all these things, then I will persevere. I will not only survive, I will thrive. If I continuously have hope, I wake up every day in gratitude, and that gives me hope for the day. And if I have hope for myself, then I can be helpful to other people. And there was something else I was going to share on, and now it has slipped my little brain here. Oh, well. Maybe I'll think of it. If you're new or returning, try not to take it all in so much. Just do one day, and then you do another day. It's not, I've been here a long time, and I am still uncovering, discovering, discarding along the way. I need to just be patient with myself. That is a gift. I need to forgive myself first, and then I need to be patient with myself. And things will fall into order if I let them. I guess our co-founder, Fred, said, put your food in order, and the rest will follow. Yes, if I work the program. It's not like I put the food down and then I'm going to get all the answers in one day. Ah, yes, I do remember the other thing I was going to say. The night before I lost my eyesight, I called someone who's very spiritual, and I was reminded that I am a beloved child of God, but that I am nobody special. And I knew what my spiritual guide meant, that I had to accept what was to come, good or bad or indifferent, or somewhere in between, well, the indifferent. That, why not me? So things are going to happen. Good. And I don't do well with changes. And thankfully here, with my 18 years career here, that I am better with changes. But why not me? Why not me? It is for my own growth, because life happens. I can't wait for me to be at a svelte 110 pounds. That may never happen. I don't know. That's in God's time, not my time. And God's concept of time is not what my concept is. But if I persevere, I will get the gifts of the program, which I have. And if I stay and practice it, not perfectly, you'd all have perfect days. Other days, not so perfect. But I'll have it. if I work them, and if I am earnest and honest, if I practice the how of the program, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And with my feet planted firmly on the ground, I cannot be in denial about what's going on in my life. You know, today I have a choice, as I was reminded a few years ago. I can either be miserable or I can choose to live today and be grateful for what I have, no matter what is going on in my life, whether it's, you know, the last 2 weeks of my mom's life, whether my husband going to the hospital unexpectedly on a trip, whatever it is. I today, because I live in a 12-step program, I have a choice. And it's for me to take and to choose. And if I don't, then I throw it away. I've thrown away what God has given me. But if I do choose recovery, and I choose to be grateful and happy and live in today, I will get those gifts and those promises and those miracles. So keep coming back. It does work if you work it. Try not to be perfect. I guess I'll just leave you with this. Program is not for those who want it, for those who need it. It's for those who do it. And don't debate it. Don't question it. Just do it, and you'll be fine. Thank you, everybody, for letting me share. And I believe it's time for us to close up. Please remember that if you like this workshop, please send in a Seventh Tradition donation to the Foam Bridge. Whenever you want to give, it's $1, $10, $100. It is much appreciated. We're going to close with a Serenity Prayer. I want to thank everybody who spoke, and I want to thank our timekeeper. I will stop the recording after the Serenity Prayer, and then we'll give out phone numbers. And if anybody wants to comment on the workshop, we'll do that as well. Thank you, everybody. All right, everybody, unmute. God, grant me the serenity.
Grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can. And the one to the different. I will not mind be done. I'm going to stop the recording and we'll give out.